You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
This is a total issue of lack of education. It's not a mandated aspect of hunter education that they talk about this issue of lead bullets and lead shot impacting unintentional species. And so it's not a problem that people are maliciously going out there and doing this, right? We just don't know about it. And, you know, I know that we can make a difference in telling these people who have never heard of this issue before. And so that's what's so exciting, is that this is totally an educational issue, and we're not into the legislation and regulation. That's not, as a community of hunters and anglers, that's not something that we want put on ourselves. We want to make sure that we are leading with the right foot forward in conservation efforts, right? We're always talking about how hunters and anglers are the forefront of conservation and wildlife. And so why not continue that and say, hey, like, I learned about this issue and I'm taking that step to continue our hunting heritage, and I'm doing it without somebody having to tell me what to do, which, you know, we love our independence and we don't like being told what to do. We're in any community, but I would say specifically in that hunting and angling community.
I had a pretty incredible hunting trip this past week. I messaged Katie Willis to see if she'd be interested in joining me for a podcast episode, and she agreed to it, then asked me if I'd be interested in going hunting with her. Of course I was. She was on vacation chasing pheasants in North Dakota, so she came to my house. We chased after some dusky and ruff grouse, then we headed over to Idaho for a few days to chase checker quail and grouse. Making connections in this crazy, awesome bird dog loving community is what it's all about. I had one of the most epic hunting trips ever with someone who was a complete stranger a week ago to one that is now a friend and lifetime hunting buddy. We had way too much fun and long nights to actually get a podcast recorded, but we'll get it done eventually. I took 3 dogs on my trip to Idaho, and I made sure to pack plenty of Purina Pro Plan. Stasha and Ruthless had their Sport 3020 chicken, and Angus had his 3020 salmon and cod. He could get chicken, but Angus loves him some fish, so that's what I feed him. When on hunting trips, I feed them once a day. When hunting is done, they've had their tailgate checks, they get double the amount in their one feeding that night, as well as a sachet of Fortiflora each, and they're ready to rock the next morning. They're all maintaining excellent weight condition on their Purina Pro Plan Sport 3020 formulas. Boss Shot Shells. The Boss 2¾ number 7 was all I needed to be able to kill chucker, quail, ruffed, and dusky grouse on this trip. Today's episode is going to touch on so many reasons why I've been shooting strictly Boss for over a year now. The ammo you choose plays a role in conservation and the harvest you bring to the table for your family. Go to BossShotShells.com and get your non-tox ammunition ordered and delivered direct to consumer. Patreon patrons, the number one supporters paying $5 per month to support this podcast, are in for a treat. Starting next week, you will have the option to watch the live video recording of each podcast. As long as my bandwidth continues to allow it, you'll be watching the live, unedited version of each recording. I'm amping up this space in a few more ways to bring you additional content, discounts, coupons, and perks. So head over to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to get signed up. Chucker hunting is hard, and I found myself using my gun stock as support for some tough climbing. But what's nice about buying a Caesar Guarini or Siren shotgun is taking advantage of their pit stop program. Once a year, you can ship your shotgun to them for a free service and tune-up. I took advantage of this last year, and my Siren 20-gauge Tempiolite came back looking and feeling brand new, even after I put her through a pretty rough first season. Go to SirenUSA.com to find out more about their entire lineup of shotguns and the pit stop program. After a week of putting dirty dogs in their Dakota 283 G3 crates and having their water buckets slosh around on the bumpy roads, I'm pretty grateful that I opted for the Dakota Guard option. It's an FDA and EPA approved additive that's put right into the production of the crate that is highly effective against dangerous organisms. It's just another way that Dakota 283 is committed to keeping our dogs safe with unparalleled protection. Use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off your next order. My guest today is Hannah Leonard. Hannah is the outreach coordinator for Sporting Lead Free, a collaborative initiative to nationally reduce lead consumed inadvertently by wildlife and people. Hannah is an avid fly fisher, an upland and big game hunter. Her personal encounter with a leaded gold eagle ignited her desire to educate others in the use of non-lead alternatives, not only for the benefit of wildlife and human health, but for the continuation of her hunting heritage. All right, let's get after it. Hannah Leonard, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, you are a rock star, and I've totally enjoyed getting to know you the past couple weeks, months.
I know, it's flown by.
I know. You're doing a lot of things, and it was great to meet you in person and have you join us at the Women's Forest Grouse Camp and see all the awesome things you're doing in person.
Yeah, it was super fun to be at Looprecht without snow. I've never been there when it has not been covered in snow.
Oh, that's right. You usually cross-country ski there, don't you?
Yeah.
I haven't taken advantage of those trails yet. I'll have to do that.
Oh, it's super fun. And you can bring your dogs, which is great.
Do you attach your dog to you, like skijoring?
Oh my gosh, no. I would definitely get in several accidents if I did that. As soon as there's a squirrel, I'm done for. I unfortunately do not have a bird dog. My dad makes fun of me. He says I've got a squirrel dog. So, but
squirrel dogs are, I mean, they're worth their weight in gold though, because right. Have you eaten squirrel?
I have not. It's on my list. It's on my bucket list.
Yeah, you should. I mean, take advantage of the squirrel dog. That's Cedar, right?
Yep, that's Cedar. He's a German Shepherd chocolate lab mix. So his bird dog of the chocolate lab did not come out. He's definitely really into keep away. So that is not a great bird dog trait.
So but tell us while we're on the bird dog subject, you just got a new puppy.
Yes. Well, I haven't decided quite if he's totally mine yet. He's my boyfriend's, but I'm taking partial ownership. His name is Eddie, and he is the result of an oopsie litter between a German short hair pointer and a Nova Scotia tolling retriever. So we have a upland and waterfowl mix going on, and it'll be interesting to see which of those two kind of is more prominent for him. He just experienced his first snow this morning. He is not a fan. So maybe not a waterfowl dog. We don't know. It'll be interesting.
Usually puppy's first snow is super fun.
Yeah. He was very confused. And then Cedar, my dog, lives for snow. So hopefully he'll rub off on him a little bit there.
Too fun. And maybe he'll be the best of both worlds. You have the ultimate upland and duck tolling retriever. So it'll like run back and forth on shore and then quick head over and point a rough grouse for you.
Right. It'll be a whole new breed that everybody will want. We'll have to find some like fun name for it.
Oh, yes, that's a necessity. And charge like three times the amount of a normal gun dog.
Exactly. Oh my goodness.
Too funny. So what does he look more like? A short hair or a toller? Or is it like a mesh?
His coloring is definitely GSP.
Okay.
But he's got like the little face of a toller. So not quite as boxy of a head, I would say, as a GSP. But then his hair feels more like a toller. So we have no idea what he's going to look like when he grows up. He's got tiny little white patches on his toes and then a big white chest kind of plate. But cool. He's been pointing at random things. So I think that's exciting.
Does he have a tail?
He does have a tail. Okay.
So is it long hair? Is it like a bushy tail or is it flat?
No, it's flat. Yeah.
Okay.
It's flat, but soft. So it's not like quite as short as a GSP hair, but not long like a retriever. So he's somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Totally in the middle. Well, he sounds super cool. Is he a good puppy?
He's a great puppy. He's hilarious. We tried the crate training thing for at night, and my boyfriend did not last very long with that one. So he's in the bed at night, which I know, you know, for many listeners, you're probably like, oh my God, it's ruined.
So naughty.
Yeah. So we'll see how that, you know, ends up playing out. But he's a big snuggler. So, you know, it's hard to say no to that. But
oh, for sure. spoiled bird dogs don't it.
I know it. I told him so, but he's definitely the head honcho of what goes into the training regime. So
you know, there are pets first, so what, you know, mm-hmm. you gotta enjoy them and love them.
Yeah
All right, so I've already skipped around, but that's what I do. I'm kind of like the squirrel girl, like talking and I get into several different areas here. But tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, Hannah.
Yeah. So, like you said, my name is Hannah Leonard and I'm originally from Missoula, Montana. And, I'm the only person in my entire family, which is a small family, but, born outside of the state of Pennsylvania. So, my brother, even, he's 3 years older than me. He was born in Philadelphia. And so, even though I was born in Montana, you know, I was raised by East Coast transplants. And nobody in my family hunted or fished or anything like that. Although I did just find out recently that my great grandfather was, really big into fishing off the coast there. Yeah, so I grew up in Missoula. I went to school for marketing at the University of Montana, and worked in that field for a little bit and decided I wanted to go back and see what natural resources were all about since I lived there in the outside world mostly. And I had gotten into fly fishing in college. I'd taken a women's fly fishing course for credit. Highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. And so then I went back to school for a master's in resource conservation. And during my graduate program, I got into big game hunting and upland hunting. And so super excited about that. You know, grew up not really sure what I thought about hunting. And this is sort of a part of the story, maybe unrelated, but I have Crohn's disease. I was diagnosed when I was 12. And I have a real hard time eating beef sometimes. You know, I was never really sure why, just kind of assumed it was one of those foods I had to stay away from. And when I was younger, somebody recommended trying venison, whether that be deer or elk. And, you know, me at the time being really nervous about hunting, I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But anyway, tried it, didn't get really sick or sick at all. And then in my graduate program, you know, I had more time, more freedom, and decided to really get into hunting because I didn't want to rely on other people for a sustainable meat source. So, yeah, here I am. I now reside in Victor, Idaho, which just got over 4 inches of snow in the beginning of October, which is wild. Yeah, and I work over in Wilson for Sporting Lead Free, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah. So what took you to Idaho? I'm curious.
My job. Yeah. So, you know, I lived in Missoula for my entire life. And when I finished my graduate program, through sending out a broad net to people of saying, hey, I just finished. I'm a poor graduate student. Somebody please hire me. I got a mutual connection down here and took the job and uprooted myself. And now I'm in Idaho and having to commute over the Teton Pass every day, which is a whole adventure, especially now that I see what the snow is going to be like. So getting those studded winter tires is going to be paramount for this year.
For sure. So when you started hunting in college and you learned about that, did you quickly realize like what an oasis that you have lived in? your entire life that you never took advantage of?
Oh, yeah. And I was, oh, man. So if anyone is in the Missoula area, so I grew up Paddy Canyon. So it's about 5 miles out of town, up in the mountains. And the range up there actually connects with Rock Creek, which if anyone also knows that area, that's a blue ribbon trout stream. And there's also quite a bit of elk up in there. And, you know, I always had black bears in my backyard, tons of white-tailed deer. And we had horses, and my horse in particular, Mirage, I purchased her, gosh, when she was, I think she must have been like 5. Anyway, but she had previously been just a packing mare for hunters. So she was used to, you know, the smell of meat. A lot of times animals do not like other dead animals on their backs. And so, it was a, you know, thing that she was used to that at the time I was like, yeah, whatever, I'm not going to do that. And so then when I got into hunting, my dad had sold that property and I was like, dang it. Like I could have set up so many cool tree stands on the property and, you know, like taken my horse out, you know, up into, you know, the Rock Creek area, the Sapphire Mountains. And I was like, man, what a missed opportunity. But it's fun now because, you know, I'll go up there and hike. And my dad has pseudo recently gotten into upland hunting in his retirement. And, you know, I go up to my old stomping grounds at Paddy Canyon and I'm like, hey, dad, guess how many grouse cedar accidentally flushed today? And, you know, finding these little hunting gems that, you know, were just right in our backyard and neither of us took advantage of them before. Yeah. So definitely one of those like, dang it. But also, you know, looking back at it now being like, well, you know, this is cool. I'm glad, you know, I had that experience and, you know, still appreciate it, obviously. So,
but growing up there, you know, around Missoula, it sounds like you were still a very recreational person.
Yeah. So, my parents were more into like adrenaline sports. So big whitewater kayakers. My dad was big into rock climbing. My mom was big into mountain biking. My mom still hikes my butt off. Like if you ever want to die going up a mountain, call my mom up. She will kick your butt. Yeah. So they were really, you know, more into that kind of adrenaline junkie type, outdoor recreating. And
that's awesome.
You know, they weren't into the, you know, hunting and fishing aspect, which is, you know, such a Montana kind of close to heart heritage. So, you know, when I started getting into fly fishing, I guess that was like my gateway drug. You know, I transitioned into hunting and, you know, my dad still to this day calls me a bubba because I'm into hunting and fishing. And even though now he's getting into it, you know, he still thinks it's pretty funny, but, yeah. So I'm super thankful that, you know, I was still in the outdoors. So it was, you know, a relatively easy transition, you know, going from being, you know, a hiker, biker, climber into, the hunting and angling community.
So do you think it's you that is getting your dad into the hunting and fishing?
That's a good question actually, because I mean, I certainly started fly fishing before he did. But he has a couple coworkers and family friends that are really into hunting and angling that he intermittently would go out with. I'm not sure if I was the one that got him into it. I don't know if I should take credit for that. Plus okay. He's not a very successful hunter, so maybe I just won't take credit for no, he's great. He got a bird dog. So I think, a lot of what he went on a hunt with a couple buddies, you know, that had bird dogs. And I think he just fell in love with the fact that, you know, your bird dog is your hunting partner and what a unique, awesome relationship that is. And so he got a golden retriever, which is also a funny story because his wife did not want a dog that shed a lot. And so they were looking at other bird dog breeds that, you know, shed less, but then they were, you know, super high energy and my dad didn't want that. And so the fact that they ended up with a golden retriever just cracks me up. But her full name is Carmelita, but he calls her Carly and I call her Carl. So,
oh my goodness, she's super cute. Yeah, so hairy and high energy.
Yeah, exactly.
but yeah, they're adorable.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh. And I grew up with, so my parents are divorced, but my mom got my brother and I 2 golden retrievers when we were young. And so I grew up with golden retrievers. They were not hunting dogs. They were definitely just, you know, house pet, you know, kiddo friends. So anyway, it's funny now that in my adulthood, have another golden retriever running around and getting those stinky ear infections that they do. And, you know, yes, just being total spaz. So yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Too funny. So give us perspective. How many, you started in college. So how many years have you been hunting?
Oh boy. Okay. So I think this will be, and COVID is so funny because I feel like there's pre-COVID and post-COVID, right?
Right.
So
like two
separate
lives. I'm
losing track of my time. I believe this will be my 5th year hunting, carrying tags. Okay. But I did, you know, a couple years there where I ate tag soup, which I think is a rite of passage. but yeah, no, I've had a lot of fun learning all the different things. Originally, I didn't want to, rifle hunt. I only wanted to archery hunt. But I haven't actually taken a big game animal with my bow. I've taken a grouse, which was great.
Awesome.
Super fun, super silly. But yeah, so now, you know, I rifle hunt, I have my bow and, you know, upland. So I'm kind of diving into it all. My boyfriend does waterfowl hunting. So I'd like to, I've waterfowl hunted once, I guess more than once, but, haven't been successful with that. So, you know, I'm still learning, still getting all my mm-hmm. feet under me with all the different, activities you can do in hunting. But,
I find that's so common that I hear around here is people will say, oh, you're like when I'm out hunting or just talking about it, they'll go, oh, you actually hunt for those grouse, the ones that are really annoying when I'm out elk hunting.
Right. Yeah.
And then they take them by the bow. Like, you know, just like you said.
Yeah. Well, I think there's like a meme out there that's like, you know, elk hunters. And then it's like somebody that's like super surprised or whatever. And it's like when a grouse like flushes, and it's so true. Cause they just sound like, you know, a plane on an aircraft carrier taking off, and you're like trying to be as quiet as possible. And then you're like, well, just ruined that one. But, and then other times they just stand there in their little cubbies and make it quite easy to take them with the bow. So
sure. It's funny. And I think that's why there's just no pressure. And I feel like we live in the oasis because everybody here is big game hunting, and we're like the very few people that are only upland hunters. So we get to take advantage of all the birds that are just left for us.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's like, it's definitely for me, it's been a challenge being into all the different various activities, sports, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. You know, cause there's archery season and then upland season opens and then big game and they overlap and then fly fishing. So sometimes I feel ADHD and I'm trying to decide what sport to do that day. And then, you know, I'm also into mountain biking and, you know, anyway, so, but it's so fun. That's cool. Such a great problem to have.
Absolutely. It is. And what are some of the animals that you have harvested so far hunting besides I'm assuming it was a dusky grouse, not a rough grouse.
Yes. Yep. So a dusky grouse with a bow, judo tip for the win on that one. And,
it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's so silly. Just a plethora of feathers coming at you, but, let's see what else. I went and hunted with my dad when we were trying to get his dog kind of used to birds, up on Rooster Ridge down in Missoula. And so, I guess I got a, hen pheasant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all I've been successful with. I shoot clays, okay. You know, they really just, like, I'm good at killing those, mm-hmm. but, being, you know, like I said, all over the place with all my different, activities, it's so hard to like, you know, find the time to go out and do everything. And, you know, obviously too, hunting is called hunting and not killing for a reason. So I've certainly, you know, flushed and had opportunities at several birds. I went and hunted in Chester, Montana last year with my boyfriend and his friends. And oh my gosh, we had so much fun chasing this rooster. but the dad who is a big upland hunter back in his day, he was just laughing so hard at us because, you know, these big roosters would flush and There was four of us that we just couldn't get a shot. So I know Lee's probably listening and laughing like, well, did you pattern your shotguns? And, you know, we sure did it. And so who knows what we were shooting, which, you know, again, we'll probably get into that later. But yeah, so, you know, it's just so fun learning everything. And I think that's part of what's really drawn me into, you know, all these activities is that there's so many intricate pieces to every single sport, you know, and mm-hmm. upland hunting and you've got all your different chokes and every brand choke may be a little bit different. And then, you know, for archery, you've got all sorts of different broadheads and, you know, don't even get me started with big game and rifles and bullet mm-hmm. grain. And oh my gosh, just my brain is constantly like, whoa,
yeah,
it's so fun. I love it. It's great.
The game then, within the game is like right. the chokes, you know? And, oh you know, when gosh. when we did that patterning demo together at camp, wasn't it cool to see, you know, like the people that had this like modified chokes in and the difference in the modified just within the different choke brands or the factory chokes? It was so cool to see.
Well, yeah. And it just totally reiterates why you should pattern your shotgun because, mm-hmm. you know, a modified choke in one brand might be completely different, you know, and more like an improved cylinder and, you know, another brand. So it's just so,
right.
so important. And I'm so glad that people are talking about it more and more now because it is a huge responsibility when you go out there to take an animal and you should absolutely know what that shot looks like. Just like when you go into sight a rifle and practice shooting your bow, you know, it's the same concept. So yeah.
Absolutely. Something that I had never known,
right.
you know, for over a decade of knowing your shot. It makes sense. We do it with everything else. Why not the shotgun?
Yeah.
Total sense.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your work with Sporting Lead Free. I know you have a personal story there too. So why don't you get into that a little bit and why this has become not only your profession, but something that you are truly passionate about?
Yeah. So, like I said, I didn't get into hunting until I was in my graduate program in college. And, I had heard a little bit about, big game hunting with non-lead, but you know, I was so new to everything that it didn't really stick with me. Right. I wasn't like, oh, that's something I should look into more. It was just kind of another one of those like nuggets of information that I was like, oh, okay. That's something to know. And fast forward to gosh, 2 or 3 years ago, I was hunting on a block management area in Montana and, came across this coulee and I saw a golden eagle on the ground, which, you know, usually if you see a bird of prey on the ground, it's probably like eating something and will immediately flush when it sees a human, right? We're predators to them. So it didn't do that. And it wasn't on a gut pile or any sort of morsel of meat. And so I immediately knew something was not right. And at the time, my neighbor had worked at Wild Skies Raptor Rescue there in Potomac, actually, her neighbors. And so I knew something was wrong with the eagle. I didn't know what. So I called my neighbor up. I said, hey, do you have the contact information for Wild Sky? She gave it to me, contacted Brooke there, who runs that organization. And, you know, my hunting partner and I knew enough about birds that, you know, we're not just going to grab it with our hands. Obviously, you know, a bird of prey is large too. So especially golden eagle. So we got one of our hunting jackets and put it around the bird and captured her. And her talons were super clenched, her wings were super droopy. And, you know, there's all these like power lines that go across this BMA. So both my hunting partner and I were like, oh, maybe she got electrocuted and she's just kind of stunned. Like, you know, we didn't know. And anyway, get the eagle to Brooke and she texts me or calls me later that day. And she says, oh, well, you know, she has really high levels of lead in her blood. And I was like, what are you talking about? She said, well, you know, you're hunting on a block management area, which are usually pretty popular areas to hunt. They're private lands that ranchers and farmers open up to hunters during the season. And So a lot of times, you know, animals love to hang out on private lands. So anyway, it's a popular area to hunt. And so she said, likely what was happening is this eagle was feasting on gut piles, and those gut piles from hunters are filled with lead fragments from lead bullets. And my brain was just going a mile a minute, you know, like, wait a minute, you're talking about lead poisoning and gut piles and hunting, and now it's killing this eagle. Like, what is going on? And, you know, unfortunately that golden eagle didn't make it. Her blood lead levels were too high, for even going through the chelation process, which is somewhat like, chemotherapy, where you go through, you know, and try to cycle the poison blood out. And anyway, so she didn't make it. And, you know, I kept just thinking, like, oh my God, like, what is this lead poisoning and hunting? What is this thing? And so researching it, got in contact with Mike McTee. He's a researcher out at MPG Ranch, and he's been doing a lot of work on lead poisoning in wildlife from hunting. And so he had done a presentation at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Club and kind of talked about it. That was like the little nugget that I got, you know, that unfortunately didn't stick with me. Right. But, you know, fortunately for me and my, I guess, peace of mind, even though at the time I found that leaded golden eagle, I had a lead bullet chambered, I'd never taken an animal with a lead bullet. And so after that, and learning about how lead bullets fragment in big game animals and how those gut piles are such an important resource for migrating raptors, that I became this kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but a very passionate advocate for going lead free. And so again, fast forward, I finished my program, and I send out an email to anybody and everybody I knew, like, you know, please hire me. And one of the recipients was Mike McTee at MPG Ranch. And I had harvested a white-tailed buck with a copper bullet that year, and, you know, sent him a picture. We kept in touch, and super awesome. Anyway, and he's like, hey, I don't know of anything right now, but I'll let you know. And then probably, gosh, 2 weeks later, he shoots me an email. He says, hey, I have a colleague down in Wyoming who is starting a lead-free outreach program. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Like,
yeah.
to have a job doing what, you know, I'm already really excited about, talking to people about, what, that just sounds like the coolest thing ever. And so he put me in touch with my now boss, Brian Bedrosian. And so now I hold the position of outreach coordinator for Sporting Lead Free. So that was a awesome, super long-winded answer to your question. But
yeah, it was perfect. Yeah. And I think it helps to know your personal story as well and your journey through that experience. And I feel like it just goes along with, we always learn the hard way, right. You know, to actually have experiences like that, to know the direct effects, and just knowing how easy it is to make a different decision.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so now you've made this your mission, in both your job and personal life, to get just the word out there, to educate. And I've been saying, like, let's educate before they legislate, right?
Absolutely. And that's a big part of, you know, what we talk about at Sporting Lead Free, is that this is a total issue of lack of education, right? Like, where, mm-hmm. when we take hunter ed, we aren't, depending on who your instructor is. Now every instructor can kind of implement little bits and pieces of their own personal education within the program, but it's not a mandated aspect of hunter education that they talk about this issue of lead bullets and lead shot impacting unintentional species. And so, you know, it's not a problem that people are maliciously going out there and doing this, right? We just don't know about it. And, it amazes me still, you know, and I'm happy that it does, that so many people are not aware of this issue, you know, 'cause otherwise I wouldn't have a job. But also, you know, it makes it so that, you know, I know that we can make a difference, you know, and telling these people who have never heard of this issue before. And so that's what's so exciting, is that, you know, this is totally an educational issue, and we're not into the legislation and regulation. That's not, as a community of hunters and anglers, that's not something that we want, you know, put on ourselves. We want to make sure that we are leading, you know, with the right foot forward in conservation efforts, right? We're always talking about how hunters and anglers are, you know, the forefront of conservation and wildlife. And so why not, you know, continue that and say, hey, like, I learned about this issue and I'm taking that step to continue our hunting heritage. And I'm doing it without somebody having to tell me what to do, which, you know, we love our independence and we don't like being told what to do. Or that's in any community, but I would say specifically in that hunting and angling community.
Right. And I feel like some of the feedback I get when I talk about this publicly is they go, well, first they take away our ammo, then they're going to take away our guns. And like, that's not what this is about. This
says,
we want you to have ammo. We want you to harvest animals. And, you know, we're feeding our families with this, but we just want to have safe non-lead options for both the, you know, the animals out there and, you know, eating it ourselves and feeding it to our children. It just makes more sense that way.
Absolutely. And that's definitely a reaction that I'll get, you know, as people saying, well, if you, you know, start suggesting that we change our ammo type or stop using an ammo type, then, you know, it's again, one of those gateways into getting our guns taken away. And, you know, that's why we also wanted to really be a hunter and angler based initiative, because, you know, we don't want to be coming out of the woodwork, you know, not having anyone in that community that understands that community trying to tell that community what to do. And that's absolutely not what we're doing. We're laying out the information. We're letting you, you know, during our shooting demos, you can shoot both lead and copper, and we'll talk about it later, but expanding into shotgun demos and all that. And so, you know, giving you the information, and then you can make that choice, you know, but without that information, you might not be able to make that choice. And we also want to say too, that, you know, don't freak out if you have a bunch of lead. You know, we're all in this crazy ammo shortage, and, you know, we would love that people can still use their lead at shooting ranges. You know, if it's not entering our food webs, you know, by all means go and have fun shooting at the range and, you know, just getting used to your firearm and all that. But, you know, as soon as it enters that food web, that's really when we want to make that non-toxic, that lead-free choice.
What are some of the non-toxic options?
Yeah. So, for big game, the most popular option is copper. And then for upland hunting, you've got kind of a litany of options. So there's steel, bismuth, and tungsten. And then there's also, Boss shot shells, which we know and love. They have a copper plated bismuth, which, is super exciting. And they've done all sorts of tests. I'm sure you've talked to Lee about this too on a previous podcast, but, you know, testing the difference between lead and their copper plated bismuth, and man, are they pretty dang close. So, yeah. And then I would say too, we also, I know this isn't in this world, but you know, in angling, there's all sorts of different options in angling products too, including tungsten as well. So, you know, it's not that there's not options out there to switch. It's just all about knowing what those options are and how to make the best choice for your specific hunt.
And speaking more specifically to lead in the uplands, non-tox has been required for waterfowl hunting since, do you know the year?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was drinking tea. 1991 is when it was federally mandated that you could no longer use lead in waterfowl.
Right.
Which was, it had been in the works, you know, since I think the 60s, I want to say, where, you know, various states and management areas were mandating it. And then it didn't become federally mandated till 91. And that was kind of a whole, I mean, obviously I was a baby in 91, so I didn't experience it myself, but, you know, in talking with people who did experience it, it was a big deal. You know, all these folks that had, you know, waterfowl hunted for years had these shotguns that shot lead, and, you know, you can't shoot steel, which was at the time the only other option. You can't shoot steel out of a lead barrel. And so everyone had to go out and get new shotguns, which, I mean, can you imagine having that happen today? You know, that would just be like, you know, I don't know, earth shattering. So, you know, the good news for all the big game hunters who are listening to this is you can switch to copper and not get a new rifle. Although, you know, maybe you want to get a new rifle and that can be your excuse, but, Anyway, but the cool thing about now these alternatives, so, you know, bismuth and the copper-plated bismuth from Boss, that can be shot out of those lead barrels, which is so cool, right? So if you have like your grandpa or your grandma, which is even more cool, they're, you know, shotguns that you haven't, you know, been able to waterfowl hunt with for years, like you can do that now, which is so cool.
Right. Lead in the upland. So, oh, yes. I mean, it's kind of eye-opening, the statistics that there's 20 million mourning doves shot each year by hunters in the U.S., and estimated 15 million mourning doves are killed with lead poisoning from ingesting spent lead shot.
Yeah.
That's a lot in comparison. It's not only doves, it's quail as well.
So birds like grouse and chuckers, turkeys, chickens, they're all in this group called gallinaceous birds. And they essentially, they pick up rocks and hard things like lead pellets that they don't realize it's a lead pellet. They just think it's the most beautiful pebble ever for digestion, right? So they're not actually eating that for a food source. They're eating it to help in their digestion. So if you've ever looked inside a bird mouth, there is not a bunch of teeth, right? So in order to help them digest their food, which, you know, is commonly seeds, berries, things like that, like imagine just like being a tiny thing and swallowing that whole and trying to digest it without any help. Probably not going to get a lot of nutrients out of it. So these items, which is considered grit, right? So it's sand, pebbles, lead pellets, whatever. That actually goes into their gizzard, and their gizzard acts as this like grinding machine, like a tiny little blender. If anyone's ever done like, what is that called? Like when you roll the rock around to make it nice and smooth.
Yeah. The rock tumbler.
Rock tumbler. Yeah. So essentially their crop stores their food, all their nice fun berries and seeds. And then the gizzard acts as the chewing, you know, how it's like malleable.
The grinder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is these gallinaceous birds. So, and doves aren't necessarily gallinaceous. And I should also say, I'm not a bird scientist. So all the experts out there rolling their eyes, like, you know what I'm trying to say. So mourning doves also pick up, grit for digestion as well. So, anytime you see a bird that's like picking things off the ground and you're like, what is going on? They're picking it up to aid in their digestion. And also, you know, some things they are actually eating when you leave that Dorito on the ground. Anyway, so what happens with birds in particular is that when they pick up that lead pellet and it's being ground in their gizzard for digestion, there's acids in there that also help aid in the digestion. And a fun fact about lead is that when it is in contact with an acid, that's when it breaks down and becomes readily absorbable into the bloodstream, into your digestive process. And so it's kind of this perfect storm, right, with these upland birds, that they're picking up spent lead shot to help in their digestion. It's grinding against, you know, other materials, rocks, sand, stone. So it's already breaking down that lead and making it into smaller pieces readily available and absorbable. And then there's their acid in their digestive system is, you know, twofold now, making it even more readily absorbable. And so that is kind of the same thing that then happens in our birds of prey, right? So they're not picking up grit, but their digestive system are super acidic. So if they, you know, eat a gut pile that has lead fragments in it, those fragments, because they are fragmented from the bullet, they again are small and easy and readily absorbable. And then if they eat a pheasant. So say you were out hunting, everyone's had this experience, me in particular. I miss, I guess. I shouldn't say I cripple because I just flat out miss. But, you know, everybody has had that experience where you've shot a bird, you know, you hit it, but either you couldn't retrieve it, you know, it's a crippled bird. And so if that bird was shot with a lead pellet, it might not, you know, be absorbing that lead into its system. There are some studies out there that do say that, you know, a shot, you know, in their breast meat can be absorbed. But the biggest thing is that that bird now has an embedded lead pellet and is injured and is easier prey for these raptors, these birds of prey. And then, you know, they're not picky eaters. They're not going to work around all kinds of things. So they inherently then ingest that lead BB that was shot and embedded in that bird. And they're, you know, weak and prey, they're easier to grab. So, you know, it's kind of this vicious cycle, right? And there are some studies out there too that have shown elevated lead levels in these birds, you know, these chuckers, these grouse, pheasants, and showing that that too can have some cognitive and physical ailments for these birds. So, yeah.
It's mind-blowing, really.
Right? And, yeah.
And it's crazy. So with big game, and you do this at some of your demonstrations where you guys have an x-ray machine to be able to take a look at people's harvested meat that's in their freezer.
Right. Yeah. So a thing that people don't realize, and again, this is all everyone's learning, right? So don't shame any of your friends that, you know, are hunters out there. But a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that organic game meat that you're bringing home, you know, you're sustainable, you're so happy, like, oh, look at me providing for the family. 15%, in our experience, 15% of those packaged game meat packages contain a lead fragment. And again, I have lists of studies where people have, you know, x-rayed packaged game meat and they've found far more, you know, fragments than that. I think the one I found that had the most was like 60% of the packaged meat had fragments. I think that was a little bit of an anomaly, but, anyway, so in our last year, we x-rayed, 1200 pounds of processed game meat. And that's, you know, ground, you know, the burger meat and roast and all that stuff. And, you know, 15% of those packages contained a lead fragment. Now, as adults, if we eat that meat with lead in it, we're going to be fine. So again, don't freak out. You're fine. But it's important for women in particular, women of childbearing age in particular, to know that, you know, there's an alternative out there to not eating, you know, leaded game meat, and that that's something you should, if you're in a hunting family, you should really consider, you know, if and when you're pregnant, to avoid eating any game meat taken with a lead bullet. And same with little kids, like any little kid younger than 6 should also avoid eating, and game meat taken with a lead bullet. And I should say this with a caveat that there is not a study out there that directly correlates leaded game meat consumption with, you know, lead issues in development. So it can, you know, it can cause, developmental delays, it can cause ADHD, like there's all sorts of studies out there, you know, kids, like we've heard in studies, you know, having lead exposure from, drinking water, you know, in lead pipes. But anyway, I just want to say out there, you know, to put some ease in people's minds that there's no study that correlates directly lead ammunition and, developmental issues with children. And so, you know, don't want to scare anyone, but I just, yeah. You know, you want to have that knowledge so you can say, oh, okay, like this is, you know, a potential lead exposure that I can avoid, and I can still do the sport that I love with, you know, my family and consume meat with my family, you know, just using a non-lead alternative like copper. And if you're like, oh my gosh, I have a huge freezer full of meat, and I have no idea what kind of ammunition it was taken with, that's where, you know, we come in and we can x-ray those packages for you and give you peace of mind and label like, okay, this one has a lead fragment in it. Give this one to your husband or your uncle or, you know, a dude, right. You know, and then, you know, other ones are safe for consumption. So it's not, you know, you don't have to go throw away all of your meat. Absolutely don't do that. You know, but just know that we have that service available. We are based in Wyoming. So it's if you're over in Maine or something, it's going to be hard for us to get over there and do that. But there are states like Minnesota does x-ray a lot of the donated meat that comes in to their program to ensure that they are providing the best, most healthy protein source for those families. So yeah.
You guys are partnered with, right? Is that right? You're partnered with a group in Minnesota that does that or no?
No, we are not. So we are working on expanding sporting lead free into different states, because we know, you know, in Wyoming, the primary sport in hunting is big game, right? But in Minnesota, it's a huge, huge angling community. There's also obviously great big game hunting in Minnesota, but, you know, their issue in Minnesota is in angling with jig heads and fishing weights, you know, coming off and everyone loses tackle, right? And loons are ingesting that lead tackle and getting lead poisoning. And so loons being the state bird, you know, they really want to make sure that they're not, you know, not hurting that species. And so we're talking about, you know, how sporting lead free can be, you know, used in different states that might have a more prominent issue in a different sport. And that's why, you know, we've branded not only for big game upland, but also angling. Yeah.
And we don't know what level lead would be toxic to us. We just know that no lead is safe.
Correct. Yeah. So the CDC doesn't have, you know, this amount of lead is safe to eat. They have a statement that says there is no known level of lead that is safe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is why we don't have lead paint. This is why we don't have lead in our gasoline. You know, as soon as toys come in that there's, you know, a worry about lead being, you know, used in the manufacturing process of toys, there's recalls, you know. So we've done so much in our society to avoid lead exposure. You know, this is another way we can do that and, you know, continue our heritage and being good stewards out there, not only for wildlife, but for our families.
So, I mean, just kind of personal question, why do you think it is still allowed?
Well, that's where things get, you know, a little political, a little hairy, right?
Okay.
So I think there's a lot of, that people are a little gun shy, pun intended. You know, after experiencing the waterfowl mandate, I think people are really nervous about somebody coming in and expressing this, you have to change or you have to do this. You know, people don't like being told what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of it resulted from, you know, organizations really being fearful that if we start telling people what they can and cannot put in their firearms, that's just another step in taking away our firearms, right? And I understand that fear. And I also want to note that this is why our program exists in the way of, we are not pushing legislation, we are not pushing regulation, we are pushing that voluntary approach with education. And so, you know, we don't want people to think that we're coming in there and saying like, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. We're saying, hey, have you heard about this? Have you tried this? And letting people have that information and do with it what they want. You know, of course we would love it if everyone switched to non-tox, but, you know, we also know that there's people out there who aren't going to do it. And that's okay. You know, you're not going to change everybody's mind. And we understand that, but we think it's really important that people can make that choice before that choice is made for us. And especially, you know, us being in the hunting and angling community, like we should be the best stewards of our environment and, you know, making sure that we can show non-hunters out there that we're doing the best that we can. And we really care about all wildlife species, I think is really important. And the fact that we do want to bring home the best, most healthy meat to our families, you know, really showing those non-hunting communities that we are taking the lead on this. There's a silly little like taking the lead on lead, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so I think just the fact that people got kind of scared of the, you know, telling us what to do with our guns is just another step away, you know, and taking them away from us. So I think that's really why it hasn't been mandated. I will say in the state of California, you cannot hunt with lead ammunition of any type. And that's a direct result of the California condor population being pretty much decimated by eating gut piles contaminated with lead. And so they're an example of, you know, regulating ammunition. And I know that they're having some real real heartstring issues over in California with, you know, compliance and making sure people are aware of the issue. And so, you know, a great benefit of the fact that California went that way is that there is so much more non-toxic availability now. You know, most every single major ammunition manufacturer has a lead-free line, which, you know, prior to that was not something that those manufacturers, I think, really put on the front line. So I think that's a great result of that. But I think we, the rest of the states, really want to lead with example and showing that we can make that decision without it being made for us.
And I think even convenience of being an upland hunter, you know, on several areas, it's required, you know, if you're by waterfowl production, even if it's in the uplands around those areas, it's still required to shoot non-tox. And I remember hunting in South Dakota a couple of years ago on some private property where they had said, you have a possibility of getting into waterfowl over on this side, so make sure you bring some steel as well. You have to go back to the truck with the lead and go switch out the ammo for non-tox was just a little inconvenient. And I thought, well, why not just shoot this all the time? And then I learned, well, steel isn't as effective for one thing. You know, we're crippling birds with steel. So finding out about BOSS and shooting that now is just been a big game changer. But I remember I personally, last year, I didn't learn about this until October. And a little bit of what Lee had told me, and then reading and educating myself more on the subject of lead. And I instilled fear in myself over it. And I remember a couple months ago pulling out meat from the freezer that was dated rough grouse, like 9/15. And I remember like, oh, I shot that bird with lead. And so I went through it like crazy, cleaning it and knowing I was serving it to my family. And sure enough, I thought it was completely cleaned out when we were eating it. I bit into BB, lead, you know, and I just kept thinking like, what if that was one of my kids that actually swallowed it? And it's those fears, right? And you know, is it, would this have affected them? I don't know. Would it have affected me if I swallowed it? I don't know. But knowing that I can prevent it, why wouldn't I?
Right. Exactly. Well, and I think too, a thing with upland hunters in particular, you know, twofold. If you're shooting lead on the landscape, we all know that not every single one of those pellets is landing in our animal, right? So that's all landing on the ground. And then that, like we were talking about before, that is then available for birds to pick up to aid in their digestion. But also, so say you did shoot a bird with lead and then you bring it home. What does everybody, you know, marinate their meat in? You know, we're not marinating it in water necessarily, and you might. But most of the time we're marinating our game birds in an acidic, you know, marinade. And so there's been studies now out there that with upland birds, if you marinate in an acid, just like the bird's digestive system is acidic, you're pulling out that lead and making it readily available. So not only are you, you know, potentially, you know, ingesting that lead pellet, which, you know, again, as an adult, you'll be okay. But you're also, when you marinate that bird in an acid, you're making that lead more absorbable to you. Like you said, if you have a choice to not have that fear, you know, we don't want to scare people. You're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But if you have that choice and that peace of mind, you know, take it, make that switch and, enjoy, you know, hunting and don't have to think about it or spend hours trying to dig out all those pellets, you know?
So I'm thinking back like to a conversation I had with my dad, who's, you know, been hunting deer all of his life. And I brought up this subject and, you know, I didn't take an approach of fear of scaring him over what's going on, but I just brought it to light. And, you know, the reaction was, well, I've been shooting lead, you know, and deer for forever and nothing's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And you just think, yeah, you're right. Nothing's wrong with it, but why not? Why not just change that?
Right.
And yeah. So what did that conversation, I mean, did you have a similar conversation with your dad?
Yes. And it's so funny having these like dad daughter conversations, right? Because, you know, my dad, bless his heart. He loves to play devil's advocate. He loves to ruffle my feathers. Even if he agrees on whatever we're talking about, he'll always kind of try to get me riled up. And so, you know, when I first started this journey of lead free, you know, my main focus was big game, but then, you know, also I knew that lead was still used in upland and he was into upland hunting. And I knew that he had boxes and boxes of lead shells. So I was like, hey, dad, you know, let's have this conversation. And he's like, it's fine. Like nothing, you know, I'm not killing the, you know, birds with lead, you know, he's killing birds with lead, but like he's not killing the unintended, you know, raptors. He's like, that's not a thing, whatever. It's nothing. And it wasn't until, you know, I made that connection of, you know, crippling the birds and then that impacting, you know, raptors and birds of prey and other scavengers and also bringing that meat home to eat, that he was like, well, yeah, you know, I better. And I think he also, the same thing that you mentioned, he hunts a lot of areas that, you know, you have, because of waterfowl populations, you have to use lead free. So again, it just made sense for his vest to be full of lead free rather than having to kind of make that switch. And, so it was definitely one of those, like, we have to talk about it. And, you know, he was pulling my chain, like, oh, you're just being, you know, a hippie, whatever, you know, even though everyone had their hippie phase, right? In middle school, that was me, wearing tie dye all the time. But, anyway, so, and, you know, his big thing too was, and a lot of people bring this up, is the cost, right? So like lead and steel is relatively inexpensive. But then you go into bismuth and tungsten and you're spending, you know, like maybe twice, three times as much on a box than you would mm-hmm. with lead and steel. And, you know, for some people that's a big barrier, right? Which is totally understandable. I mean, getting into hunting itself, you know, can be a financial barrier, but I think Lee does a wonderful job. Lee Jost does a wonderful job of explaining that when you're using a material that is effective, so like his copper boss shot shells, copper plated bismuth, you're not having to take as many shots. You're a more lethal hunter. So, you know, you're not with steel, you're not going through, you know, three shells every time, you know, two shells, whatever, every time to try to take one bird down. It's one shell, one bird. So, you know, and talking to my dad too about patterning and all that important stuff, I think he's definitely, you know, switching more into it. And it also helps. So his wife she's definitely anti-hunting, which is, you know, interesting, that kind of family dynamic, and refuses to eat any of the meat he brings home, which is, you know, that's totally okay. And that's, you know, her decision, but she also has been like, well, you don't need to be spreading lead in the environment. So she's also kind of been on my team and being like, hey, let's you know, for all these reasons, let's switch to non-tox. But yeah, I mean, from non-upland standpoint, you know, when I met my boyfriend, he also did the whole like, what, copper bullets, you're silly, this is dumb. Mm-hmm. He'll kill me for saying that, but and you know, then he saw me take my deer with copper and he was like, dang, that was awesome. Like, that's so cool. Like, it really does work. This isn't some, you know, hippie magic smoke show thing. And, you know, but he also was like, well, I grew up eating game meat that was shot with lead bullets and I'm totally fine. And, yeah. I think that's great. I'm super happy that he's totally fine. But like you said, if you have that choice, why not?
So tell us a little bit about what the demos look like that you put on.
Yeah. So, part of my job is to do shooting demos. And we've primarily been doing that with, big game hunting with rifles. And so, basically what we do is we have these big barrels that we set up and, line them with milk jugs full of water. And we have, the participants shoot, we have two of them, and we have a participant shoot one with a lead bullet, and then the second one with a copper bullet. And then we have this fun little funnel system that we funnel all the water out, and we collect all the fragments from the lead bullet. And then with copper, it's non-frangible. So that means it doesn't fragment, stays whole. It's this beautiful little mushroom. And so they can visually see that difference in the fragmented lead versus the copper and its entire bullet. And then what we'll do too, so in big game hunting, there's grain weight, which is the weight of your bullet. And so a big thing in that is that you want weight retention in your shot. So when you take a shot, you want the bullet to retain its mass as long as possible, because that's going to make a better wound channel. It's going to make a more ethical kill. What people don't realize is when you shoot that lead bullet, all those little fragments, that's losing weight. That's losing its weight retention. And so what we'll do is, after we collect all the fragments and the bullets, we'll go back to, you know, the package of ammunition, and it'll say, okay, it's 180 grain bullet, lead bullet. And then, you know, we'll take the biggest mass of the lead bullet we can find and weigh that, and then see how much was actually lost in fragmentation. And then, you know, that is when people really start seeing, like, oh man, like, not only does lead fragment and cause harm to unintentional wildlife, but it's also ballistically, you know, some will argue this, but ballistically it's not as effective as copper, because copper keeps its weight all the way through. And so that's a huge kind of aha moment for folks. And then occasionally we'll also have some ballistics gels, which are just, think about your grandma's Jell-O, but it's clear, and essentially we'll shoot that, and then you can see the entire bullet trajectory and see the fragmentation. And then sometimes when available, we'll x-ray that ballistics gel to show those fragments that we can't see with the human eye, those little, you know, lead dust fragments that eagles and other scavenger species can eat and they don't see either, to avoid it. And so that's kind of what our big game demos look like. And we recently did our shotgun demo at the grouse camp, which was super fun.
Yes, it was.
And, you know, the same thing there. We wanted to show the difference in ammunition types, right? And in upland, we fortunately have several different lead alternatives. So same deal with the, you know, obviously with shotgun, we're not going to collect all the pellets. That wouldn't really show us anything. Mm-hmm. And it would be very hard to do.
And you guys had to move back, right? Wasn't my husband originally shooting at 30 yards and then you guys moved it back to 40 yards to catch?
Yeah. So what we wanted to do was show the penetration of different shot type. And so to do that, I made these giant Jell-O molds. And then we shot them with lead, steel, boss shot shells, copper plated bismuth, and then a tungsten load, which was, I believe, a turkey load. So,
yeah.
But the concept of showing just the different metal types, and we definitely need to work on I need to work on my gel making skills, because, you know, shot shells are powerful. And, you know, by the time they got to the end of the shell, there was, you know, a few little pellets in there, but you could still see the difference in penetration between all of the different materials, which was cool. Yeah. You know, and then being able to bring that back to the gals at camp and having that visual and saying, like, okay, so this is how much penetration lead has versus steel versus copper plated bismuth versus the annihilation of tungsten.
Right.
You know, and showing, like, these alternatives are perfectly suitable. You know, like, there's no reason not to use an alternative if you're thinking about a performance difference. And so I think having people have that visual is really impactful, both, you know, with the big game demos and then the shotgun demos, because, you know, who has the time to go in and make a gel mold themselves and go to the shooting range mm-hmm. and do it themselves? You know, that's, we don't want to do that. We want to go shoot clays, and then we want to go grouse hunting, and we want to have fun. Right. So that's kind of the purpose of us doing this, is having that, you know, available for folks to see and experience.
Yeah. It was incredibly helpful. And even not just doing that, but at least everybody should be patterning their shotgun to know,
oh my gosh,
know what your shot looks like. And even do that, you know, you can do that at home. Look at the difference between steel, lead, and boss copper plated bismuth, because there is a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think
and,
I have
knowing your pattern.
I have one study in my
is ideal
in my list. Yeah, right. Like know what it looks like when it's going out there. It's important.
Yeah.
I do have one study in my quiver that did do an actual active hunt difference between, I think it was steel, bismuth, and lead. And they really mentioned choke selection and patterning. They were like, all of them performed great. However, it really made a difference what your choke selection was and then mm-hmm. making sure you patterned based on, you know, how your gun shot steel versus bismuth. And all that. So even, you know, even people out there who, you know, are still shooting steel, which is great, just really go and make sure you know what it looks like and change maybe your choke depending on those pattern results.
Yeah. That has been really interesting too. Just, I've been playing with different chokes and patterning to see what those look like from my factory versus the Briley chokes. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy cool. I'm kind of geeking out over it.
Well, it's super fun and it's satisfying too, right? Like, oh, yeah. Cool. Like now I can actually see and know the difference between improved cylinder and modified. And
right.
Just
right.
Really nerd out on choke. Like it's so fun.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, even this last weekend when I was out pheasant hunting, you know, there's a lot of birds that were getting up over 40 yards. And now that I understand my shot, I'm like, nope, too far. Just mm-hmm. not, you know, I'm like, oh, good job, dog. You worked that beautifully. But yeah, you know, you just, it makes a difference. Why take those shots? There's no point. Even knowing you got good ammo that can probably do the job, it's still not that important.
Right. So, right. And thinking about, you know, those ethical shots too, and not being yeah. afraid to not take those shots. And, you know, yeah. I know for, you know, big game hunters, obviously we do, you know, we range find our animals, but they're not fleeting like birds. Sometimes if you're yeah. hunting pronghorn, maybe, but, you know, we don't typically in upland hunting, you don't range that pheasant and then take the shot. Right. That would be crazy.
Right.
But, so it's important too, to know, you know, while you're at the range, like, know that, okay, that's what 40 yards looks like. That's what 60 yards looks like. And I know I'm not going to go past, you know, 40 yards or, you know, and just really having that visual practice. Or if you have access to a rangefinder when you're out hiking, you know, whether you have a shotgun with you or not, you know, just pick a tree and be like, okay, I think that's 30 yards. And then, mm-hmm. oh, just kidding. That's actually 60. And, you know, just getting your brain trained to figure out that yardage. So you know when that ethical yeah. shot is there or not is super important. Cause yep. I know I suck at figuring out how far away things are. You know, that's definitely a thing I'm happy to have, you know, a rangefinder for, but
pheasant are super hardy birds and they could, you can cripple them and they're going to continue going. And oh my gosh, even when I was driving on my way home, I had a pheasant fly right in front of my truck and I heard a boom and I saw feathers fly. And I looked in my rearview mirror and he got up off the road and took off flying.
Oh my goodness. Right.
And I'm like, and that's the summary of my pheasant hunting opener this year. Even my truck can't kill one.
Oh my Lord. It just makes me realize like how weak humans are, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That was a human. We're so soft.
Hannah, tell us, where can we find out about demos that you will be holding in the future if we want to come take a look and see what's going on?
Yeah, so currently we're not necessarily doing public open demos, so we don't have like a calendar of demos. But if you are interested in getting a group of friends together, or if you're part of an organization and you want to have, you know, a fun retreat, please, you know, find us on our website, sportingleadfree.org. And we have a, you know, a button there where you can contact us about scheduling a shooting demo. I'm fairly mobile. I drive all over the state of Wyoming. And I'm up in Montana pretty frequently as well. So, I know I'll be up in Montana doing shooting demos, the first week of November. And those are for, you know, school club groups, which will be really fun. But if you have an organization that wants to schedule a shooting demo and I'm up in your area, please, please, please reach out. And we provide it all. You know, you don't have to necessarily bring your own ammo, though I do recommend bringing your own firearm and a few rounds of ammo so you can see what you've been shooting. Mm-hmm. But check out our website, reach out, schedule a shooting demo. They're not just for, you know, organizations. You can do it too, like I said, with a group of friends that are just curious to know. It's not necessarily a shooting experience. This is not a super for fun thing. It's we really want to make it an educational opportunity, but yeah, please don't be afraid to reach out.
Do you take your x-ray machine to those if people want to bring meat in to have done, or is that kind of like a separate thing that you do?
So it depends. So we share the x-ray machine with the Teton Raptor Center. When we have demos that are somewhat local, it's pretty easy for me to ask the gals in the clinic there if I can snag it for a little bit. It's a little bit harder if I'm going farther. We do have access to other x-ray machines at other veterinary clinics in town. But just to know that, I would need to know that ahead of time so I can make sure that the clinic knows to schedule with a different veterinary clinic. But okay. Yeah, so, you know, if that's something that, you know, you have, again, a group of friends that wants to x-ray your entire freezer, you just let me know and I'll be there. And, I'll have a day of wearing lead vests. You can use lead when you're protecting yourself from the x-ray machine. And let you know what you have in your freezer.
Perfect. And I'm a proud ambassador of Sporting Lead Free.
Yay.
And yes. And I think that's important for, those of us that, you know, are out there and just want to be better people in the world as conservationists, as hunters, and just knowing you can make that decision. Can you tell us how to sign up to be an ambassador for Sporting Lead Free?
Yeah. So we actually have a couple different ways you can be involved with us. So you can like us and follow us on social media. All of that is at Sporting Lead Free. And we have a membership program where essentially you just are saying that, hey, I support this initiative. This is awesome. And we'll send you some stickers and a koozie for signing up to be a member. And then our ambassador program is usually we select those ambassadors from our membership, or if somebody's really interacting with us across the interwebs, you know, I'll reach out to you and be like, hey, come be an ambassador with us. You're a great, voice in your community. And I should note too, so even though we're a Wyoming-based initiative, you can be a member, you can be an ambassador from anywhere. I think, you know, we have an ambassador in Michigan, an ambassador in Mississippi. So we're all over the place, right? So the ambassadors are essentially community members in the hunting and angling community that are in support of using lead-free. And you ambassadors are so important to us because you are the boots on the ground advocates for us. And a huge part of the future with the ambassador program is I'll hopefully be organizing demos with each ambassador in their state, in their city, and helping with that education process. So if you are interested in becoming an ambassador, sign up to be a member. When you sign up, there's a little option to say, hey, I'm interested in being an ambassador. And then I'll reach out to you and have that conversation about what that entails for both parties and go from there. But yeah, don't be afraid to reach out, and I'm here for you. And I'm so excited to grow this community and show people that we are, as hunters and anglers, curious and interested and wanting to do this. So,
yeah. Awesome. Thanks for all the work that you're doing, Hannah. It's truly incredible, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with the future of this initiative. So thank you.
Thank you for being an ambassador with us. It's awesome.
Absolutely. And I'll be including your website and social media handles in the show notes so people have easy access to just click and go and find out more.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Courtney, for having me on today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. I hope you learned something from this episode and were inspired to make choices to be better and do better as a hunter and conservationist. Be sure to check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast for all of your bird dog and hunting needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283. If you're loving this podcast and want to support it, get additional discounts and content, go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to sign up. And please be sure to support the conservation organizations of the birds you're chasing after this season and the public lands in which you hunt.